Welcome to the APAP podcast. My name's Corinne Young. I'm your host today, and I'm the president of the Association of Pulmonary Advanced Practice Providers. And with me today is Tyler Cook. He is an adult gerontology nurse practitioner at Overlake Medical Center and Clinics in Bellevue, Washington. He attended Lakehead University in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, where he obtained his Bachelor of Science in Nursing in 2010. He has served as the president of the Lakehead University Nursing Association and later became heavily involved in the Canadian Nurses Students Association, where he served as regional director and as president. He was also a board member of both the Canadian Nurses Association and the Canadian Federation of Nurses Union. He received his Master's of Nursing degree at the University of Toronto and began working as an NP in outpatient pulmonology in April 2016. His main areas of clinical interest include chronic cough, COPD, and asthma. And the main reason we have you on today, Tyler, is because of that interest in COPD and asthma, because there are so many inhalers on the market for these disease states. And back 100 years ago when I started in pulmonary, I think we had six. And now there are so many. And so I thought this would be a great opportunity to run through inhalers and help everybody kind of untangle this web of inhalers that we have now. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. I love this topic. And I think, you know, maybe you were in Palm 100 years ago, but I did my first rotation in Palm in 2014. And that little chart on the wall that we have in all our exam rooms with the inhalers has grown astronomically. And I think I remember my first rotation running in and going, how the heck am I ever going to know all of these inhalers? And that was when it was about half the size that it is now. So it's a little tedious, but I think once you kind of get in the hang of understanding the drugs and the devices and then kind of learning how to navigate the system in terms of formulary preferences, it becomes second nature and actually quite a huge part of our job. But beyond that, really understanding how patients are using the devices and making sure that they are actually getting full benefit from them. Because I think that part is something that has kind of been forgotten about and something that we're talking about a lot more now.
Yes, and we're definitely going to cover this episode. And for those of you that are listening to this podcast, we are going to have some visual cues and representation on the podcast today that you can watch on Spotify and on our YouTube channel. If you're interested, but we'll be leaving some links at the end of this podcast as well for you to see these devices. Also, if you can't watch it while you're driving, please don't watch it while you're driving. So let's start with the families. These are like the mob families, the four families. Can you help us start with those first?
Right. So I like to think of, you know, inhalers as a spectrum. We start with our short acting, our quick relief medicines, if you will. You know, our albuterols, our Atrovents, our things like that. And then we have a kind of our long-acting agents, right? Our long-acting bronchodilators, whether that be, you know, the beta agonists or the muscarinic agents. And then, of course, our steroid inhalers, which can be by themselves or combined with other long-acting agents, to the point where we now have triple therapy, right? Where we kind of put everything in one inhaler. So that's kind of covers the types of medications that we put in these devices, which covers quite a bit, all the way from short to long acting to combo therapy.
Excellent. And now, like you said, they all come different shapes and sizes now. And this is where a lot of the confusion happens for our patients, is the actual devices themselves. So talk to me about these devices. We're all used to the MDI, the meter dose inhaler, which is the old fashioned pump, you know, type inhaler. Besides MDIs, what are out there now?
Right. And so, you know, our standard little MDIs, which are the HFAs now, right? I think it was 2008 when they phased out CFCs, which were damaging the ozone layer, right? So they kind of switched these propellants to more environmentally friendly propellants. And that's kind of the old fashioned thing that I think when people think of an inhaler, they think of, you know, you push this little button and out comes a mist. But even now we have breath actuated, you know, HFAs like the Qvar Ready Haler, where you just kind of open it here. There's no coordination needed. You just put your mouth on it and kind of inhale. And the breath is actually what delivers the medication. So it's kind of like a new and improved HFA, which is still technically a metered dose inhaler. Of course, we have our dry powder inhalers, our DPIs. There's a lot of these now. I think some of the most common ones that we're used to seeing are like our discuses, like our Flovent discus or our Advair discus, which is now generic too, and a little bit different actually. And then of course there's like the Wixela InHub, which is another kind of generic version of that. And then our Elliptas are once daily, which are personally my favorite because once daily dosing is just so easy, and this is just such an easy device to use. But even in terms of DPIs, we're seeing a lot of different ones. And then I think newer compared to all of these are the soft mist inhalers, right? So our Respimats, Spiriva Respimat, Stiolto, where I actually call them like a mini nebulizer almost because they really don't require much effort other than taking a breath in, but it kind of creates this mist that deposits better into the lungs. And so we see that with the Spiriva Respimats, Combivent inhalers and things like that. And then, of course, we have our nebulizers, right? And I think we're at a point now where pretty much every medication that we have in an inhaler form, we can nebulize, right? So our Sava Samas, ICSs, LABAs, and LAMAs, they can all be nebulized now. So there's a wide range of ways to get these medications into patients' lungs, basically. That's kind of the summary there.
There are so many devices, and one thing I find very helpful to see all those devices and visualize it, and sometimes even prompt patients to which one are you taking, is that Allergy and Asthma Network poster. I don't know if you've used that as well.
Oh yeah, I have a copy of it in my office, and we use it in the exam room. And like you said, it's quite helpful to have a visual thing for patients, especially when you're doing seeing a new patient that says, you know, I was given, you know, this inhaler. Well, what inhaler is it? You know, you can give them this chart that they can actually point out what inhaler they were using. And sometimes you get some good information, right? People are using an ICS as a rescue inhaler, and it really helps to kind of figure out what they've been taking. And again, helps you appreciate just how much is out there now for patients for asthma and COPD.
Yep. And we're sharing that on the screen now. We'll have links to that poster as well. You can order them for your office. I have one in every exam room. You can get the little small 8x11 ones that you can laminate, or you can have large posters in your room. But the 2024 version, if you guys can't see it right now, it has all the biologics on there. It has the leukotriene modifiers on there. It's got PDE4s. It's got the nebulized therapies. So it's very encompassing of all the treatments on there. So I do recommend you take a look at that Allergy and Asthma Network poster, you know, when you get a chance. All right. So with different types of devices comes different types of problems, the roadblocks, frustrations that we run into with patients. So what are some common mistakes with all of these different types of inhalers?
Yeah. So this is just to kind of preface when we get into the bread and butter of this talk is, you know, I did a little bit of research, and I was actually interested that like UpToDate has its own section on inhaler technique and challenges with inhalers. And, you know, just the research that shows, you know, in several studies where they're looking at inhaler technique that less than 50% of people use their devices correctly. That's a pretty significant number when you think about how many patients that we encounter every single day. And I use this in my education to patients so that they don't feel like, I don't want you to feel offended. I just want you to know, like, literally there's evidence that like 1 in 2 people are not using their devices correctly. And that in 40 years of researching this, there's been little improvement in terms of improving technique in patients. So I think it's just a really important topic that has really become a lot of topic of discussion, right? At a lot of pulmonary conferences we've even been at, in terms of, you know, what do we do about this issue? What are the problems? And the problems start not just with the device, but just in general, like adherence, right? So they have done studies. They look at patients with COPD, with asthma, and patients with COPD and asthma tend to actually have higher proportion of medication non-adherence than other chronic diseases, up to 50 to 80% in some studies. I actually didn't know that when I was researching this, and I kind of thought to myself, wow, that's pretty sobering considering those are the two diseases I take care of so much. And so then I said, well, why is that? Why are the patients not adherent to their therapy? And one of the main reasons is they just don't start it, right? And so you think about, why is that? Well, they get a script at an urgent care for Advair. That's not the formulary preference. It's a $500 copay for them. They don't start it, right? So why aren't they starting therapy? We have to kind of figure that out and address that issue. Poor implementation due to infrequent use, right? So maybe we have more intermittent patients, like intermittent asthmatics. They're not using their devices that much, so they're not getting enough practice, right? So they just kind of get sloppy in their technique. They're not doing the technique correctly, or they're not taking the dose correctly. I can't tell you how many times I have a patient come to me that's taking Advair only once a day, not twice a day, and complaining by 6 o'clock in the evening, their wheezing and chest tightness is coming back, right? And then kind of just lack of persistence. So they might feel good and just stop using their device. So all of these things, just in terms of, which is, I actually think is an easy educational opportunity when we're educating about disease process, can actually help the whole inhaler technique improvement process. Mm-hmm. So and when it comes down service. To just use, exactly. Yes, you can. When we do have these conversations and do device demonstration, yeah, it is something that you can bill. And I actually I don't have the CPT code, but there is a code. Maybe we could, you know, share that another time. But yeah, exactly. Something that we can incorporate into our visit and bill for. When we're talking about the actual devices themselves, so there's pros and cons to every device that we use. So in terms of, like a metered dose inhaler, so basically when we're inhaling the medication, you know, into our lungs, upper airway deposition is a problem. So the medication not going into the lungs and going more into the back of the throat, for example. And so metered dose inhalers, these little bad boys here, they spray a lot faster than we could inhale. So it would make sense why, if you're not coordinating your breath properly, that medication is going to just kind of deposit into the back of your throat, not get into your lungs. And I was actually surprised to hear that in some cases, up to 80% of the medication gets deposited in the back of the throat. So you're only getting 20% of the drug, you know, into your lungs. And that could explain a lot of problems when patients are saying, well, these inhalers aren't helping me. And so to kind of mitigate issues like that, we have spacers or valve chambers, which I actually didn't realize there was a difference between spacers and valve holding chambers. I think basically what I prescribe is probably a valve holding chamber, because when you put the meter dose inhaler into that, there's like a one-way valve, so it allows the mist to kind of stay suspended, so you can kind of take a little bit more time to inhale the medication into your lungs. And so that's why with meter dose inhalers, especially with patients that you might be concerned are having trouble doing the coordination of the breath, these spacers can be quite beneficial in terms of making sure that medication gets into their lungs.
The spacer, the valve chambers that you're talking about, what's really helpful, I feel, for those, the type of patient, is it allows them to inhale and exhale with it in their mouth, so that dose isn't wasted. So if you have somebody like with neuromuscular disease or something, you know, who can't just take in this huge tidal volume of air, they can just kind of pant into it, or children who may not be very coordinated or that type of thing, they can kind of breathe in and out and get that single puff over multiple breaths.
Exactly. It just makes it a lot easier. And then, you know, when we think about, you know, upper airway deposition, you know, that might be not so much, I mean, it's an issue, but you might not feel it if it's just like albuterol or a bronchodilator. But when we're talking inhaled steroids, this is when the voice hoarseness and things come out, right? And patients don't like that. Obviously, their voice changes, doesn't feel good, and they stop taking their medication. So with these particular aerochamber devices, you can actually reduce deposition from 80% to 20%. So that's pretty significant. And when you think about it that way, it's like it's just a little piece of plastic thing. Like, prescribe these, get these, teach your patients how to use them, have them use them. And it makes all the difference. I've seen in clinical practice, you add on a spacer, life-changing for a lot of people. So I think upper airway deposition, right, when we're talking about devices, that's a huge issue, right? The next issue is coordination. So being able to, you know, push and do the breath hold, or like use the Respimat, turn it and push it. So obviously, you know, this is something that we're doing in the exam room with the patient. You know, what are the comorbidities? Arthritis, or do they have tremors, things like that. You have to really think about, you know, when you're assessing your patient, can they actually use the device? Because if they can't coordinate pushing and breathing, it's obviously not going to work, right? that's what you think is kind of self-explanatory, but these are all things I think we do not even, we don't, without even thinking about it, right? You're just looking at the patient and kind of, you know, I'm at the point now, it's like, I'm already thinking 10 steps ahead. This is probably not the device for them. So coordination is a huge thing. And then the breath hold, the infamous breath hold. We're always talking about hold your breath for, you know, like 5 to 10 seconds. And it's actually interesting because I was curious. I was like, you know, have there done studies on what, if you don't hold your breath for 10 seconds, you know, what does that look like? And studies have actually shown that less medication is delivered to the lungs without sufficient breath hold. It could be a 16% reduction with a 1 second hold versus a 10, you know, second hold. And you're already thinking about the amount of drug that's getting deposited at the back of the airway. Now you're not holding your breath on top of that. I mean, these patients might be getting virtually nothing into their lungs and they come back and see you, nothing's helped. So I think when you look at all of these issues, this is such an easy conversation to have with patients, but it's also, it's pretty sobering, right? When we think in many cases, people are just prescribed these devices. They're not taught how to use them. They don't understand why they're using them because they're taken sometimes an ICS as a rescue inhaler. And it makes perfect sense why sometimes we're seeing people that are horribly controlled. And sometimes the answer is very simple to help, you know, the process along to get them under better control.
Mm-hmm. Another common mistake I see with the metered dose inhaler is sometimes, especially like you mentioned, arthritic hands, instead of holding it upright and spraying the top, patients will turn it upside down and use their thumb to inhale it. And the problem with the metered dose inhaler is when it's upside down, that liquid falls to the bottom, air rises to the top, and they're not getting therapy. And that's something I didn't even realize until recently. And so, like you said, you know, coordination, what's the right thing for the patient? I also like to use air guitar as a great option. You know, you don't need to have a guitar to pretend to play one. And so play air guitar with your patients in the office with their inhaler. If you don't have a demo, show me how you use your inhaler. You know, if they can't do the first dose with a sample right there with you, then show me, just pretend. Like, are you shaking it? You know, are you holding your breath? You know, are you doing the breath hold? Are you, the timing of how you're doing it, how you're holding it, you know, all those things I think are definitely worth spending the time with your patient to make sure that they're delivering the device like it's meant to be. How about some maintenance
Absolutely.
That people may not be aware of with some of these?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of just, they get dirty, right? They get dirty. Put these things in your mouth every day. And it's something that I don't often think about, because there's other things that you think about before that, but you don't think about what do you actually have to do to clean these devices. And it really just depends on what device, you know, you're using. So typically for like a metered dose inhaler, I mean, really they want you to take the canister out and actually rinse all the plastic casing, you know, underwater, and let it dry overnight. So they recommend doing that, you know, like once or twice a week, basically. Whereas with, you know, like a dry powder inhaler, I mean, these powders, you know, your mouth can kind of get on these mouth pieces here, get a little grungy. They actually don't want you to get that wet. So they just recommend, you know, wipe that maybe once a week with a dry cloth, for example, and keep them dry. So it's really not that, you know, complicated, but I bet you a lot of people don't actually clean their inhalers, and it's gross. So if you're sick or something, right? You want to keep them pretty clean, but it's pretty basic way to clean it.
Yeah. The DPIs, the dry powder inhalers. Another one is to tell them to exhale fully before they open it. Because if they blow into it, they could disturb that dry powder and, gum it up with humidity, but also, you know, blow it out of the inhaler before they're able to inhale it. That's a common mistake too.
Yeah. Well, we just always try to, you know, put your head to the side and like empty out your lungs. And I always explain to patients, you know, you want to get it as much of that medication in your lungs as possible. So you want to empty your lungs out as much as you can before you take that breath in. And I think that really could be applicable to, you know, any inhaled device, except maybe a nebulizer, of course. But so I think it's good to get in the habit of telling patients to do that and to turn their head to the side to do that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How about the Respimats? They have a priming rule, and which includes if you don't use it within a week, that you have to rate prime them. You want to talk about that?
Right. So brand new Respimats, you prime them four times, right? So once you insert that canister, you want to turn and push actually four times. And I did know about if you don't, so it's, there's actually two reasons you would actually reprime a Respimat. And I didn't know this. So if it's not used in 3 days, they tell you just to prime it once. If you haven't used it in more than 3 weeks, then they actually want you to do a full prime cycle, which is four primes, four sprays. So, you know, I think that might be, that's probably more applicable to like Combivent. If people are using Combivent as like a quick relief and they're not using it often, they may need to reprime it a little bit more often. Whereas if they're using, you know, Spiriva or Stialto, like something on a daily basis, that might not be much of an issue for them, except for the initial prime. And I also tell the pharmacies, I put in my notes to prime and pump because I have heard of cases where the patients get the medication without it being primed and they don't necessarily know how to do that. So even though I teach them how to do that, it's nice, especially for your older patients, to have the pharmacy prime and pump, you know, have pump them for the patient when they pick it up. But if you're giving samples in your clinic, you need to make sure you're priming
River.
It. Yes. And I always like to show them how to do that, how to put it together, because they could be a little bit tricky. The canister yep. and the device come separate. And so you do have to unclick here, put it in. It takes a pretty good amount of effort to push that canister in, and it doesn't go flush, which can confuse some people. They think they haven't pressed it hard enough. It's not supposed to be
exactly.
flush. You know, understanding you all those little nuances. mm-hmm. Yep. You can see that little bump there. Yeah. Well, anything else, Tyler, that you would want people to know about inhalers or consider?
I think, I think the big thing is just really kind of understanding, once you kind of understand all the drugs and the different devices, you know, the next kind of art in what we do is really figuring out what device is best for the patient. We talked about a lot of different devices. I don't think we really talked about nebulizers that much. I mean, there is a growing market for that. I mean, we're seeing the fact that we can pretty much nebulize any medication now for our patients. And some patients just do better with nebulizer therapy, right? And I think it becomes, this becomes the art of what we do, right? Figuring out the right device for the right patient. And sometimes, you know, I think people tend to think, you know, nebulizers can be a little tedious almost, but really in some cases, it's just the best thing for a certain patient, even temporarily. Like if patients are leaving the hospital after an exacerbation, sometimes it's more appropriate for them to be on neb therapy for a couple of weeks until maybe you see them, you know, in an outpatient setting and want to switch things. And so I think really the goal is always looking at your patient and figuring out what's the best way that I can get this medication into their lungs and as much of that medication into their lungs. And that comes with time and realizing some of these challenges, which certainly helped me, because when I started in Palm, it was like, here's the inhaler. You know, you didn't really think about all the intricate details that can actually adversely affect this, you know, medication delivery and disease control.
Do you ever use peak inspiratory flow meters?
So, yeah, we do have the in-check dials, which I actually have one here. And this is a handy little device that people can use in their clinic. And I think it's hit or miss in terms of if I know people use them or not. But basically, it's this kind of plastic thing that I'm holding here. What I don't have is the disposable mouthpiece that goes in the end here. But this device is really nice because you can pick the type of inhaler you know, that you want to potentially give to your patient. And they have little settings here that you kind of just put the dial to. And then you have the patient basically take a breath in, and it gives you their inspiratory flow in liters per minute. Which I think, you know, for DPIs, they want like a 30 to 60. And sometimes you see them barely get 20 to 30. And so it might clue you in to say, you know what, this is actually going to be a challenging device for the patient. Maybe we need to think about soft mist, a meter dose inhaler with a spacer, or even nebulized therapy. And the nice thing about these is that it's really easy to do. And you can also utilize it to do inhaler technique, because they actually have to go through the motions of taking an inhalation. So you kind of hit two birds with one stone. So it's a really cool little device. It looks like a spacer. And I think, you know, especially when you're concerned about, you know, how well they are able to breathe in, it's a really quick way to figure that out.
I think when, you know, the next biggest hurdle, once you memorize every single inhaler now that's on the market, what family it belongs to and how to properly use it, is then what order do you give them in, right? And so I think we probably have a whole nother podcast on the GINA guidelines are a great place to look as far as how to, where to start and how to escalate your inhaler therapies, and GOLD for COPD patients, where to start and how to escalate your therapies. And that's where a lot of those combination therapies, I think, come in place. But I think you did an excellent job of covering, and I'm so glad you brought samples for everybody to see how to use. Again, if you want to have a visual version of this podcast, you could see it on our YouTube channel. You could also see it on Spotify. But we will also have some links for you in the show notes for that Allergy and Asthma Network poster, as well as to the guidelines as well as far as inhaler usage. So thank you, Tyler, again for being with us today and sharing your knowledge. And please like, subscribe, follow the APAP podcast. It's a great way to support the organization. And we will talk to you guys again later.
Thanks for having me. Take care.